We had a thoughtful talk about many topics.
Yeah.
Without that other guy.
Yeah, I told him that we were just going to talk about football for 30 minutes.
Do you want to throw in our football talk at the very end?
Fantasy football talk? No. That's okay. I think we should just quit while we're ahead.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 286, and I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And it's just the two of us. It's an Ashless Chats.
Ashless
Take
Chats.
Three, right? Three?
Yeah.
Is the third or fourth one?
Number three.
Actually, no, when he had the baby, I think we probably did a whole bunch of them.
Oh, okay. Well, this is Ashless Chats X,
yeah.
I guess.
10.
I would want to make up something funny about why Ash isn't here, but I mean, like, the sad reality.
Well, it's not, yeah.
The sad reality is that we endured a hurricane last weekend,
yeah.
Obviously, down here in Florida, and Ash is thankfully with power now, but without internet connection.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It.
And for those asking, because I know a lot of people asked online, and it was very nice of them to check in, but mm-hmm. Everybody is okay,
yes.
Including all of our families and everything. Everybody survived. Nothing too terrible. It's just a lot of usually what happens when you deal with hurricanes in Florida, just tons of power outages, right?
Yeah. I mean, it sucks really yeah. bad. It's like, for anyone that's never been through a hurricane, I don't think I could really accurately describe it to you, but just imagine that your house is going through a car wash for, like, I don't know, 18 hours. That's
yeah.
maybe the best way I can describe it to you.
It also sort of sounds like a train is, like, driving by outside,
yes,
right? Like,
yes. And the scary thing is, like, you know, it comes and goes, right? Like, so there's, mm-hmm. you know, in Houston, their problem was the rain, the flooding.
Right.
In Florida, we tend to have problems, especially inland. There's the problem is the wind, right?
Which usually leads to tornadoes.
And, yeah, which leads to a lot of scary stuff. So, like, you know, where I am and where Ash is, like, our biggest problem is, you know, things falling down, like trees falling down, and there's, like, debris everywhere, and you know, it's just really scary. And this time it came at night, so I basically just sat in my bedroom. I was pretty much awake all night, like, in mm-hmm. and out of sleep, and I was just listening to tree branches.
You're in a new house too, which
yeah.
is, like, even weirder, right?
Oh yeah, we're in a different place now. So I was listening to tree branches just bouncing off the roof and praying that
right.
they didn't put holes in the roof and that, like, they didn't fall and break anything in the house. And it turned out that, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning, a window broke in the house and it was, like, windy and raining. And I had to get up and fix a broken window at 4 o'clock in the morning in the dark.
How bad did it open up, break, or just kind of, like, break?
It broke, like, in the sense that, like, a branch fell off the roof and tapped the glass. So, like, the branch
right.
didn't come into the house.
Right.
But it, like, busted the window, and I was just like,
yeah.
oh my God. And I just stared at it and I was like, how am I going to fix this? I don't have anything to, you know.
Oh, right.
Ended up, like, I wrapped a garbage bag around a cardboard box and then just,
there
like, taped it over the window.
Perfect.
And that worked. I mean, until it,
yeah.
until it could be fixed. But, and the funniest thing is that thankfully, like, I didn't lose power, but right as I was getting ready to patch the window, I had everything in my hands and I was staring at it. And then, like, the power went out. And I was like, no. And then, like, you know, it came back on like 5 minutes later. And I was like, okay, I can do this. But
I mean, that's really good. It's pretty. So, like, everybody was asking me, you know, like, I hired a bunch of Floridians, weirdly enough. There's like five of us that work for me in my office.
Mm-hmm.
And so we came in and everybody's like, is everybody okay? How's it, like, what's it like? What's going on? Like, how does it go? And I'm like, you know, everybody's fine. Everybody's checked in. We're all, like, all of our families were good. And I was like, the thing is that, like, it's weird in Florida because it is a thing that we deal with.
And yes.
A reality year in and year out that we're likely to get at least a tropical storm, if not a hurricane, you know, at least every couple of years.
Yep.
And I was like, really the thing that no one thinks about is after it. I'm like, most people are okay during it. Florida doesn't really flood so bad. It can, depending on where you are, like, mm-hmm. Jacksonville flooded really nasty this time. But there's a lot of rivers there. Anywhere near, like, rivers and big lakes might flood a little mm-hmm. bit. But for the most part, Florida's a giant swamp, so it just kind of like soaks all of the water back into the ground. Yes. I guess I don't even know.
Sure.
Kinda, I think it's sort of built for storms too, and
creates sinkholes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. But what I was saying, I was like, it's after the storm, and they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, I remember after Charlie, I was like almost 2 weeks without power. Like it's brutally a long time, and it's summer still. Like, it's hot. It's not like comfortable inside. And that's not like everybody's like, oh, no power, I'll just open up the windows and hang. It's like, no, it's like 90 degrees outside and humid as all get out. Like,
oh, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do.
It's just brutal. It's absolutely brutal. The nice thing, though, and we heard some stories from Ash about this, and I don't know about you guys, but neighbors tend to pull together really well after hurricanes, and like when one neighbor gets power back, all of a sudden it's like, you know, put some food in our fridge and run a power cord over to your house and run a fan or something, like whatever you guys need to do. Like, people start kind of sharing and being a little more. I remember after Charlie, we were charging our laptops and our phones on our neighbor's external plugs outside. Yeah. We lived in like a duplex area. We were doing that, and like, it, you know, just everybody kind of like is like, well, let's get out of this shit show and do what we need to do kind of thing.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it does tend to bring out the best in people, I mean, as well as the worst in people, but you know, I saw a lot of really good things happening this time around, you know, churches opening up, letting people come over. This was probably like honestly the first time that I thought Nextdoor was a useful application. You know, like since its inception and widespread use, because people are actually sharing.
My parents use Nextdoor. It's so weird. Yeah. It's like the only app that like I feel like everybody's parents and they know.
But people actually shared useful information, like here's where you can go to find gas, here's where they still have water. Like, you know, the thing about the hurricane is that the buildup in anticipation of the hurricane is like pretty stressful even when nothing has happened, or if nothing actually happens. But you have to prepare. And that's the crappiest part of it is you know, in this particular hurricane just kind of went left and right and all over the place, and changing directions. And so like, that's the problem, is that you have to get ready and you never know how much you need to do.
Well, I remember like the day of, I was like, oh, this is heading where my parents live near Sarasota. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to like basically barrel directly at them. Like it was originally going to miss them entirely. And then it came around the West Coast. And then it was like, oh, it's going to hit, you know, Tampa, and then it like further south, and I was like, oh my God, it's gonna like just make landfall directly on top of my parents at like a category 4 still.
Yeah I mean, I went to bed,
and then it cut in really hard and went straight at Orlando essentially. Like, it was like the storm was just all over the place.
I went to bed thinking like, well, it's gonna go to Tampa, you know, and I'll just like make sure my parents are okay, and then like in the middle of the night I wake up and they're like, it turned to the right, and I was like, okay, we need to be ready. So earlier in the week, I actually had a hotel reserved in Valdosta, and I was like, we're just going to drive. We're going to leave town. And
but even that, like, people don't realize how bad the highways get overcrowded. Mm-hmm, gas is sold out all the way out through the state. So like, you're not guaranteed to make it out of the state.
No.
And like, on top of that, it's Florida's big, like it's way bigger than people think it is. So even from Orlando to Valdosta is like, what, a 5-hour drive in good traffic?
It takes
like,
a long
at like best times, it's 5 hours to get out of there.
It takes a long time to get out of Florida.
Yeah. And even then, you're still feasibly in the storm path, right? Like, it's like, to really get out of the way of the storm, you're driving for like 16 hours to get out of the way.
But that's the thing, is that like a week out, you don't know if you're supposed to drive to South Carolina or if you're supposed to drive to like Tennessee, right?
Right, exactly.
And I don't know that either would have been great options. Like, by the end, you know, driving inland, you know, staying where we were, that was the best thing to do. But anyways, it's a terrible thing.
If you're not in a flood zone, you figure out if like your house is going to be okay. You think, you know, for the most part, broken windows for sure, but you know, like you think your roof isn't going to cave in for no reason.
Oh yeah, that's
like your best bet usually is just to, you know, use the term hunker down and just make sure you've got supplies and you're ready to go. And if you're a little worried, then there's shelters all over the place that you can usually get into that are literally built for hurricanes and tornadoes. So you can go over there and kind of get into those and ride it out if you want. And I knew some people that did that actually, and they were checking in with like their kids here in New York, and they're like, oh, I'm playing checkers with blah blah blah, and you're like, oh, okay.
Did you see there was a whole thing with Kristen Bell? Kristen Bell was here in Orlando filming a movie and basically got stuck here because of the hurricane. She was staying at the Swan and Dolphin, which is a hotel on Disney property, and just decided to make the best of it. I guess a bunch of senior citizens were also sheltered in that area, And so she just basically like called bingo matches for them and hung out with them. She ended up doing like a Skype call on Jimmy Kimmel Live. She went to a local middle school and just like performed music. She sent out a tweet.
She did like Frozen songs, right?
Yeah, she sent out a tweet like somewhere before the hurricane. And she goes, hey, does anybody know how to play a piano and have like a microphone and a PA system? hit me up. And I guess she just went to a middle school and sang a bunch of songs for people. So
awesome.
Good on her. But, you know, moral of the story is that everybody's okay. Ash is okay. Just doesn't have internet. Hope to have him back hopefully next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that
Spectrum. Yep. Get on that.
Get on that. So that's our hurricane experience. This week we'll try to do something like a normal show. We'll talk about what's been going on in the news, which includes some Star Wars, Apple News, Nintendo, and the South Park is back. And I didn't get to watch it yet, but you can tell me what happened because I heard it was funny.
Yes.
And then in our reviews, we're going to talk about, I want to talk a little bit more about Agents of Mayhem since I've played more of it. I'm also reviewing an indie title called Observer from the developers behind Layers of Fear, a game I really enjoyed last year. Cool. And you and Ash actually have been playing Iron Marines, which is the new release from Ironhide Studios, which are the makers of Kingdom Rush series. Yes.
News.
I think this happened last week. Colin Trevorrow is out on Star Wars Episode 9, and there
he might have been out before last week, and then I think the announcement happened last
week. There was speculation. They're like, George Lucas is the only person who should come back to direct this film. And then it turned out they're bringing back I know, right? He's done. They're bringing back J.J. Abrams, which my initial thought is that's a very safe choice. It'll be a fine movie, but it's not going to blow your socks off, in my opinion.
No, it's not going to divide audiences like Rogue One, or like it's not going to be this like new bold take on Star Wars. It's going to be, you know, it'll be a very fun kind of probably nostalgia-y Star Wars movie. I don't know who's writing it though, right? I don't remember who is actually writing it, which I think is probably a bigger deal on that number of Star Wars movie.
And I think for a lot of people the concern with, you know, the first movie story wise was that it was very nostalgic, and you know, some of the plot points at least mirrored, or you know, were kind of callbacks to you know, A New Hope. Granted, now there's, you know, clearly more diversity with, you know, strong female characters in, you know, Jedi roles and things of that nature.
Right.
But that aside, like the plot, I guess, was similar to A New Hope. And so, you know, my fear is that we're going to see more of the mirroring of the original trilogy. And then it's just going to be like, hey, remember the Death Star? And it's like, yeah, we do, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I want you to come up with something new. Tell me a new story. Like, are we still building super weapons that are going to destroy planets? Like, there must be something else, right?
Right.
So hopefully there's a twist, right?
I mean, like, at least there's Last Jedi in between the two, where you know, Rian Johnson's directing and he wrote it as well. So like, at least there's a chance that the direction's going to change. It's not like it's an all JJ trilogy, you know? So
yeah.
So to the idea that Episode 7 was maybe a little nostalgia, 8 could be this like new take or this exciting kind of take on it, and then maybe 9's got a good spot to kind of like start from at that point. So
yeah, I agree. And obviously with, you know, with the death of Carrie Fisher, the, you know, whatever they had planned will most likely need to change in some way, right?
Right.
So maybe that'll be the catalyst for doing something else.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, we'll just have to wait and see.
It's so far away.
Yeah, I mean, who knows, you know. But JJ Abrams, it's a very safe bet. I think there's nothing wrong with it. You know, it's not like it's like, it would have been weird if they were like, George Lucas is back. Yeah. I'd be like, "What? No. He didn't even direct the Star Wars we like." Like, like keep him away. Let somebody else do it. Like, thank him for creating this universe, and then, you know, give him his $10 billion check and let him go.
Yeah. I mean, I've said this before, but as much as people hated the prequel trilogy, there are still things that came out of that trilogy that are enduring now, you know?
But are they enduring because Clone Wars is really good and Rebels is really, like, you know what I mean? Like,
but that's what I'm saying. Those things exist because of that, you know?
Right. Like, Darth Maul was a paper-thin character inside of the prequel trilogy,
mm-hmm.
and he has become one of my more favorite villains from Clone Wars and Rebels. Like, he morphed in probably books that I didn't read, I would assume as well, but mm-hmm. he morphed into a way more like fleshed out, like interesting villain, as opposed to I look cool and I have a dual wielding like sure. lightsaber. Like, he was like nothing otherwise.
Sure. But I mean, so. Like, it takes a movie like that to even do something as bold as going like, hey, there's more than one kind of lightsaber in this universe.
Yeah.
And I kind of just need to see something like that in future Star Wars movies to say that we're not just kind of doing all the same stuff. I want to see something sure. new, you know?
Yeah.
My hope for this film
Your
at some
hope?
Point, my new hope for this, and I know this won't happen, but this is just kind of like, you know, headcanon or fanfic, is that they do something with Billy Lord, kind of like as a wink wink to her mom, you know?
Sure. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, maybe something happens at the command center and she decides to like step up and take the helm, you know, because right. heroes come from anywhere. That's kind of the thing with, you know, with episode, like, actually this trilogy seems to have that as a recurring theme, you know, yeah. so far, right. Yeah, is that so. Heroes can come from anywhere. They come, you know, Finn, who was a stormtrooper, and Rey, and then the new, character that was introduced for episode 8, whose name I can't remember, but she was introduced during Celebration.
You know
who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. I can't
but remember everybody's like already in love with her, and yeah. I'm sure she'll be amazing. So, yeah, that's kind of my hope for that. But
Did you start reading the Phasma book or anything, or no?
I didn't. I'm so behind on.
Are you?
On all the book series, but obviously, like, I will get to it.
Yeah.
But it's just been crazy, man. It's been crazy.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, so
we kind of skip right into the news. I'm gonna upend this news segment for a second. But did you run a 5K? Is that what I saw?
I did.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was on the morning of the hurricane.
Oh, that's how I missed it. Okay.
It was for the Susan G. Komen, like, run for the cure, race for the cure
nice.
Thing. So
nice.
Did that for work, raised a few $100 for it, and then went and ran a 5K. I did really well too. Well, I mean, for myself, I did probably abysmally for
everybody. I wouldn't be able to do it. So good on you, man. That's
well, I was never a runner growing up. I was a swimmer, and then I started jogging a little later, or like recently, I guess is the best way to write that. Mm-hmm. I was gonna say later in life, but recently I started jogging some more, and then on my 37th birthday, I got up early before work and was just like, I'm gonna go run. And I went, and I knew I'd already signed up for this 5K, and I was like, I'm just gonna go and see if I can do a 5K. And I did it, like, just doing it
right.
without stopping. I didn't like walk or anything. I did the whole 5K, and it was like, I don't know, like 10:45 per mile or something like that. And then I was like, oh, I can do a 5K. Okay. Cause like I had never, like literally never run more than like 2 miles in my entire life previous to that moment. So then I started doing like some more running where I would do like a mile and then 2 miles and then a 5K and then 2 miles and then a mile and then a mile and then 2 miles and 5K. Like I would just keep kind of laddering up and down each day. And that way, like, I wasn't getting bored. So I would do a 5K, which is fun in the essence that you really get to just kind of like not think about anything. But then you really look forward to like the 2 mile days in a row. Like, you're, right. like you're like, I'm going to go for 10 minutes. And I'll be right back. This is great.
Let me ask you something about running organized races. And I don't know this, but I know this because my wife runs a lot.
Yeah.
And what I get a sense of is that it's very easy to sort of get swept up in the high of participating in an organized race, just because there's like, they kind of pump you full of adrenaline before
feel that until the very end, because and I got this, it got explained to me by a volunteer because I had no idea what happened, but okay. I was like not late to the race, but I was later than I wanted to be or whatever. And when I checked my bag and then like went out to run, I was like, I think the runners were supposed to have started like 2 minutes before I got there, and then the walkers were going to start, because there was like a whole bunch of walkers, and they were going to start like 10 or 15 minutes later. Well, I get out there and there is just a sea of walkers walking, like, already.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I can't describe how many people this was. It was thousands upon thousands of people walking. And I was like, oh God, I missed it or something, you know. And I was tracking my run on my watch anyways. I wasn't like doing it via the race. So I start my run and I just go, and I unfortunately did the thing I didn't want to do, which was I had to sprint the beginning of the run and like get around all of these walkers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I thought there was only like, I was like, oh, they must just be like, I started too late was what my brain thought. So I'm trying to get around all these walkers. They're just there for the whole race. There's people walking the entire like 3 point whatever miles that I did.
Right. Yes.
But that high felt, the thing that felt the most, the two moments that felt the greatest were going under the entryway where the clock is and like the big, like it's a big arch.
Right, right, right.
Going under that to start. And then it was even cooler, like ending it at like a thing where people are like cheering and like somebody's announcing you coming in, not my personal name or anything, but like, oh, here comes some more and like all this. And like ending it through that was actually pretty cool. Like that was really interesting and like fun. But what ended up happening was, I guess they tried to line up survivors in the front. So survivors of breast cancer were lined up up front, and they wanted them to like kick off the race, even if they weren't running, they were just walking. They just wanted them to be like the first ones through the arch. And then they were going to kind of like separate them a little and then be like, go runners. And then like all the runners were going to go. And then, you know, 15 minutes later, they're going to do the walkers. And apparently what happened was they got the survivors up there. They started walking. The walkers saw the survivors and were like, oh, we started, and just started walking. And there were just thousands of people.
So it turned into like a kind of a mess.
It was a sea of people walking. Like it was so crazy to get around. So like I had to get all through that. And then weirdly, the Central Park was like still open to the public. So there were like people biking and running, like not in the race.
Doing
also,
a normal everyday thing.
Yeah. There was like, when we first started, we were walking down Central Park West, which is like a main drag. And there's like thousands of people walking down the road. And there's bikers coming the opposite direction at like full speed. Oh, and there's people all over the place, and like I'm like, what are they doing? And there's like cops trying to like get the bikers to move, but like they didn't close the road off for some reason. I don't know. It was all mayhem for like the first probably 8 minutes of the run. And then once I got like past all of that, there were still people walking, but it wasn't quite as bad. But it was really fun. And then the stupid thing I did was that same day I was like, oh, I'm gonna ride my bike into the city because my friend was doing an improv show. And the easiest way to get to this one theater is by bike. Like the train is like a 50-minute train ride, and like it's too expensive to take a car, but you can get there on a bike in like 15 or 20 minutes. Well, it's over a bridge and it's still like a 6-mile ride each way. So I ran a 5K and then like almost immediately, like within an hour and a half, got on my bike and then rode my bike 6 miles into the city to go watch my friend do improv.
No thanks.
And then an hour later was back on my bike going back over the bridge going home. It was like just the next day everybody was like, hey, are you sore? I'm a little sore from like running. And I was like, yeah. It's like, but I also did 12 miles on my bike after that. They're like, what is wrong with you? Like,
yeah, no
I
way.
Don't know. So
no way.
But it was fun. It was a good run and it was neat to do. And I'm going to do some more of them. So
cool.
My dad wants me to do a half. My dad is 69 right now and said he's going to do a half marathon through the age of 70. He does the Gasparilla each year.
Cool.
So he's trying to get me to do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. My wife does some of the she's done a couple of the Star Wars races.
She has also tried to get me to do those with her. So I probably will do one with
her. And those are like off the chain from what I've heard. That those would be cool. Anyways,
there's the Star Wars ones in Orlando, and then there's the Marvel ones in California.
Yeah, they have different
yeah
separate events at Disneyland and Disney World.
Yeah,
there's like a light side there, a dark side here, and then some other stuff.
Oh, that's
but
cool.
Yeah.
Anyways,
cool. I just wanted to know.
Yeah, thanks.
So
yeah, it was fun.
Upended the news, but that's all good. We'll move on to a quick Games with Gold update for now. We are in the middle of September. So what is currently available is Forza 5 Game of the Year Edition, which is an Xbox One title. Oxenfree, which is an indie title, which I really love from Night School, which I believe included some ex developers from, I want to say,
is it
Telltale, Austin? Telltale and Disney.
Oh, is it Telltale?
Yeah, I think maybe Disney too. Uh-huh. I could be wrong about that, but definitely Telltale. So that's a good kind of like a spooky, like an old school style adventure game is probably the best way to describe it.
It's really fun.
Yeah, point and click. That's a great game. And then Battlefield 3 for Xbox 360, which is pretty solid as well. I don't think those
I downloaded
games...
Forza 5. We talked about it a little, but it's bizarre to play Forza 5 after playing Horizon.
Yeah, like, we're more like arcade racers and not sim.
It's not even the arcade. There's just, I mean, yes, we are definitely more arcade racers than we are sim racers, but it's also like it's just track to track to track to track to track. Like, you literally just erase a track, and then they're like, cool, here's a track. And then you erase that track, and they're like, cool, here's a track. And you're like, it's just like, it loses some of that magic when you're not like driving around the countryside in between, you know, your formatted races. But it still looks, I mean, it's amazingly beautiful for a game that's what, like 3 years old now.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like their hallmark, right? It's like racing games are always the games that kind of shepherd in new console generations too, because it's like, you can just make a car look pretty and shiny.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's Games with Gold. Do you want to tell us what, Apple introduced?
Yeah. So there was an Apple, giant Apple announcement. They went through kind of their whole product line. The only thing they didn't talk about was their iPad. And ironically enough, there was a change to the iPad. It got $50 more expensive without saying it to anybody.
Like, for no reason.
Seemingly.
Okay.
No idea. There was no update to it from what I understand, but the iPad Pro went up $50. I don't really understand how that works, they apparently can just raise prices if they want to.
Sure, they can do that.
I will say I got an iPad Pro, and it is it's a fantastic tablet. So if you are shopping, it's worth the extra $100 or whatever. The thing is unbelievable.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But they announced, you know, in short, they announced a new 4K Apple TV. Neat. Just kind of bringing it in line with other entertainment platforms. Roku's already got one. Amazon's already got one. You know, you can count the Xbox and PS4 in there if you want. So or Xbox One S and the PS4 Pro, I think, in there. So they're updating their video platform for that. They weirdly announced a video game along with it, and they keep kind of like tiptoeing into this notion that you can play video games on the Apple TV, and you can. It's a pretty powerful box. It's not like an underpowered box or anything, but it's like such a weird so it was the guys who made Journey and Flower, right?
Oh, okay.
They made this new game. I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it's like you kind of like you and a friend like flying through the skies. It was very Journey Flower-ish. Like it fit among their like ethos, which I guess makes sense for Apple to kind of like, hey, look, it's like this beautiful, well-designed game, you know? But it's also just weird to me that they weren't just like 4K video, 4K, like just announcing the things that the box is really built for, because it's not really built for games. There's no discrete GPU in it. It's not like... Yeah, I don't know. So anyways, that's $179. If you use Apple stuff, it works well enough, and there's no real issue there.
Okay.
They announced the next series of the Watch, which I have the Series 2 of, and I actually do like a decent amount. I think Series 1 had a ton of problems. I think Series 2 fixed most of those, and the biggest one being battery. And then Series 3 and waterproof, which it is. And then Series 3, they added LTE to the Watch. So now the Watch will operate on its own without your phone entirely, where you can stream music, you can, you know, run and do all the other things.
Can you just buy a watch and not have an iPhone?
No. So you have to have your iPhone. It runs off of your iPhone's number, but it still costs, I think they said, $10 more a month for LTE version of your phone on the phone plan.
Because it's like a connected device, according to your carrier, is what it shows up as. One of those
things. Piggybacks your phone's phone number, but it, because you can take calls on it and shit too.
Okay.
But
all right.
But it is its own device as far as streaming and everything else goes.
All right, that's cool.
I'll be honest with you, I don't have LTE. It's not something I severely miss on my watch. It would be okay, I guess. But if you're thinking like, oh, but Matt, I would like to go running and I use Apple products, and I don't want to bring my phone with me anymore. Like, I do that because I have Bluetooth headphones, and then you can offline sync music to it. And then it does its own GPS tracking. So it tracks my run for me.
Oh, cool.
So it's like, you can go without your phone already. It's just kind of adding, now you can get text messages and other stuff without your phone if you, you know, didn't care to bring it with you for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Pretty cool though, I guess. Same kind of pricing structure. So the new watch. And then the big one was new phones. iPhone 8, iPhone 8 Plus, and then the iPhone, what we all thought would be X, which is actually the iPhone 10.
So they skipped 9.
They skipped 9.
Just like Windows.
I thought they would go with X because it, like, you know, this is apparently the 10th anniversary, I guess, of the iPhone, is what they said. So that's fine. But iPhone 8 and 8 Plus are incremental updates to the 7. New stuff, but nothing crazy, you know, like more powerful, better battery life, all that kind of stuff. The biggest update for both those phones is wireless charging.
For the 8 as well?
For the 8 as well.
Oh,
and
cool.
The neat thing is they're going with the open standard, which I always called Qi, but they were calling Qi on the on the panel or whatever.
The keynote, yeah.
But it's the QI, that one. They're okay. doing that open standard of wireless charging. So you have any number of things that you can buy to charge your phones with, and you can use them in your car and all that. They didn't go with some proprietary Apple wireless charging.
Did they give it a dumb name?
No. They just said, we're using key charging.
Wireless charging. They didn't call it like air,
no.
air charge.
But they did announce in the future, you're going to be able to buy this big white pad that you can put your phone, watch, and headphones on, and it'll charge all of them wirelessly. I'm sure that pad will cost upwards of $150, even though you can buy like one of those for $15 on Amazon right now if you want.
Maybe it'll also charge the key fob for your Land Rover at the same time.
Yeah, you never know.
Yep.
So wireless charging on the 8 and the 8 Plus. I have the 7 Plus. I think it's a fantastic phone. The camera on it is incredible because mm-hmm. it's got dual camera on the back. It's giant. I won't argue that at all. But the big news was the iPhone X. It is what they're calling a bezel-less phone. There is still a minor bezel around it, but you know, it's kind of edge-to-edge screen, except for on the top they have this like tab, which is where the front-facing camera sits.
That's interesting that the screen has like a cutout on it.
Yeah, well, like, so there's other wireless or other bezel-less phones. Samsung's got one, and I want to say LG has one, and both of those also have little cutouts at the top, but they're way less pronounced. They're like smaller, but their front-facing camera isn't nearly as ridiculous as this one. So the front-facing camera has two cameras in it, and an IR blaster, and
IR blaster, huh?
Yep, because they are doing no more Touch ID. Now you will unlock your phone with your face.
Oh, it's not for like changing channels on your Apple TV. It's for like
no, not an IR blaster. Sorry, like well, it is an IR blaster, but it's to detect facial.
It's interesting.
It's like your Kinect does.
It's interesting how like the day after this come out, like the national news is running stories about like, is your face data safe? But this is something that Windows has had with Windows Hello for a couple of years.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. I mean, Windows Hello was always a little janky to me. It never really worked.
It works great for me.
I mean, it works. It was a little bummy on my Windows PC, like when I had it on, and then I was just kind of like, I'm not using this, so I turned it off.
Oh, that's right. It never not recognizes me. That's interesting.
I think it might also recognize it. There were some issues with it when they rolled it out, but it's fine. They did have it first. Like a lot, that's how Apple does everything, though. Everybody has something first before them, and then they just like announce it as if it's their own, and then make it worthwhile. The thing I was going to say about it is that I don't really care if it works well enough, then sure. I could see issues with it. I wish they had kept a Touch ID like on the back, just somewhere inconspicuously, because it would have been nice to have the option to be like, I don't want to use my face, I just want to use my Touch ID. But seemingly if you say I don't want to use my face, then you are entering your password every time you want to do anything. Which is annoying. Touch ID is actually, I think, really wonderful and makes the entire process of owning a phone and using it as your like main device for things useful,
because you can open it without looking at it. You can just kind of hold it in your hand and unlock it and then start working.
Mildly wondering how Apple Pay is going to work, which is a thing I use a bunch, and the way it works is you like double tap your phone when it's locked and it brings up the cards and you pick one and then you use your Touch ID to pay. But now do I have to like double tap, pick up the cards, pick one, scan my face, put it down by the credit card? Like, what has happened? Do I lean my face over the credit card machine to like
I don't know,
get it to scan at the right time? Like, it's very bizarre. I don't really understand that part of it, but you know, we'll see. The design's pretty nice. It looks like an iPhone still, except minus the button.
I heard the joke is that now you can break your phone on the front and the back.
Glass on both sides of all the phones, 8 as well, because that's what sort of allows, they're saying that's what allows the wireless charging. It's a nice phone. What I like about it is dual camera on the back, so it's got the same camera that the iPhone 8 Plus has on the back, except it's also got, I think they added a second stabilizer, optical stabilizer to it, so it should be even better with jiggle and blur. And then the front-facing camera is absolutely insane and is now capable of doing AR mapping with your face. So they added animated emojis.
Oh, that's a great way to exercise that technology.
I mean, I don't know, man. Like, here's the thing. I think that it actually looked pretty cool, and it worked pretty well from what they saw in the demo.
Yes.
So neat, whatever. But to me, I feel like AR is gigantic. I've been saying it for a long time, and we've been saying it collectively, but when I went to WWDC and they made the point that once iOS 11 rolls out, that there will be something like 300 million AR devices in the wild, mm-hmm. just like immediately for a software update.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Animoji is the easiest way to sell it.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, that's where, you know, like your friends and family who have no fucking care about what AR is or what it could be doing for you now have this like neat, fun thing that kind of introduces them into what is going on. Do you know what I mean? So it'll be a thing. I think it'll get used some. It should be bigger than stickers, at least, which are the most pointless announcement they've ever had.
Yeah, I've never sent a heartbeat or a doodle to somebody on purpose.
Right. Yeah. Like all that stuff is relatively stupid. So I think this can be really big. I think it can be kind of neat. I think this camera on the front is pretty insane. I think that's where Apple is doing stuff that is just mind blowing. Is not in there. Google's doing it in software for cameras, which is like also incredible. Apple's doing it in like making these incredibly compact cameras that just do amazing photography work in the background. So 4K video, they're doing 1080, 240 frames per second slow motion video. Like, they were announcing stuff that is just, it's crazy technology wise. The phone, although, will be $1,000, which is officially the most expensive smartphone ever created. And, you know, everybody's gonna be like, oh, fuck Apple, $1,000, blah, blah, blah. But guess what? The moment Apple does it, Samsung's going to do it next. Like, Apple's just opening that door for everyone else to go ahead and price phones.
It's like, for some people, I'm sure this is already true, but for some people, this will be the only computing device that they have, right?
Correct.
So I guess if you tell them, hey, it's $1,000, it's just like, well, okay. I mean, this is my computer now.
Yeah. My advice would be, don't pre-order the 10. Wait till it's in an Apple store. Go play with it. See if you like it. Because there's also new gesture-based stuff on how you navigate everything because there's no more buttons. So everything's like kind of gesture-based now on the screen. I would say go play with it. And if you hate it or you're like, oh, this is not, like, I don't like Face ID or whatever it might be, then get an 8. You know, like, it's your 8s are still crazy powerful phones that are going to do everything you need them to do. They just won't be bezel-less and they won't have the front-facing, like, Animoji camera, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's okay.
So, yeah, that's fine. And those were all the big announcements. There was some other stuff, but all the iOS updates roll out Tuesday. So iOS 11 rolls out Tuesday, I believe. The watch update rolls out Tuesday. And then I think High Sierra, the new macOS update, rolls out, I think, also Tuesday. I think they might all be coming out on Tuesday. So update your software, everybody. I don't know why people don't. I meet a lot of people that are like, I never update my software. And I'm like, that is the dumbest. You should be updating your software all the time.
Yep.
Because things break and stuff is wrong and they do updates for a reason. So update your software, get some new stuff, and you'll have AR this time. So there's like a good reason. How's that?
Yep. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So we'll see. From one company doing making billions of dollars to another making apparently billions of dollars. I was trying to pull the article before this so we could know how much, but Nintendo is going to relaunch the Nintendo Classic in 2018. So hope you didn't buy one for $200.
Yeah, I mean, are they? I've read that they're bringing it to Europe, but are they going to bring it to United States as well?
I thought I had read they were bringing it to United States, but I may have missed something. That's possible.
It does say next summer Nintendo will also bring back the Nintendo Entertainment System NES Classic Edition with new shipments.
Yep.
I think maybe Nintendo is slow to the game, but maybe they're starting to realize that what they thought they could make money wise with supply and demand by manipulating supply and demand, they are now starting to maybe lose that edge to scalpers on eBay. And maybe they're finally listening to people in social media that are really just sick of those tactics.
Right.
A strong argument for this is like, you know, maybe they said at one point they're releasing these devices for their hardcore fans, but you know what? What if grandma wants to go to the store and buy one for her grandson that just wants it as a Christmas present or something like that?
Yeah.
It's like, it's impossible to buy Nintendo products, I think, for the average consumer, especially the consumer who is not sitting at their computer 24 hours a day waiting for something to happen, right? You walk into a Target and you go, hey, I want that Nintendo Switch Swatch thing. It's like, well, we don't have any. It's like, okay, well, I guess I won't buy one, right?
Right.
And that's kind of the end of the story. So Nintendo has said that they're going to produce supposedly way more SNES Classic than they did for the original release of the NES. And I guess they're going to bring back the NES next summer, which could be great. And I, you know, like you said, I hope you didn't pay $200 for it because honestly, the lineup on the NES Classic is like, it is, these games are not amazing. They're, I think they're important historically, like to, you know, to learn about like the evolution of gaming in general.
Oh, but sure.
I don't think you're going to have like a super fun time playing Donkey Kong, you know, for $200.
Man, I bought that Mega Man thing for $6 or whatever when it went on sale. Have you fired that up and played the first Mega Man?
No, I haven't. But I know...
can't get like 10 minutes into the game. It's like I'm so bad at it. I was like, I forgot how freaking hard this game is.
Oh, yeah. These games are terribly hard. I mean, Mega Man 2 is really where like the game, you know, where that series took off. But
Mega Man 1 was basically Mario, but you can shoot a bullet in a straight line.
Yeah, pretty much. And I mean, like, so, you know, the classic, there are classic games on this system. Like everyone should play at some point in their life. Super Mario Brothers, the first Zelda game, you know, the first Metroid game, Kirby. You likely won't finish these games, maybe outside of The Legend of Zelda. But I think the SNES lineup, you know, the games are much stronger titles. And I think games that would even hold up today. I don't think the NES games would really hold up. So I think if you can get this system for $60 next summer, like that would still be a deal to have. But,
sure. Also, if you have always fancied the idea of learning programming, look into a product called the Raspberry Pi, and you can build yourself your own little illegal emulator.
Yeah,
and play
that's
these
the other
games.
Thing too, is that if you really, or if you're like dying to play these games, there are plenty of places legally and illegally that you can get them, including on Nintendo's other platforms where you don't have cross-buy capabilities, so you could feasibly be purchasing Mario over and over and over again. So
yeah, speaking of that other platform, the number that I was looking for, I found, is that the Switch has become the fastest selling console for Nintendo ever and has moved 5 million units since March.
That's amazing. I mean, like, so, to me, that system has very few games, but the draw is so strong.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, I'm not trying to crap on it. Like, you and I played Snipper Clips at PAX in Boston last year, and we had a blast, right?
Yeah.
But that's just one game, of course. And they're re-releasing it as, like, Snipper Clips Pro or something like this. So even if you bought that game, you get to buy it again. And that's classic Nintendo, right? But, you know, for me, like I said many times, like the Legend of the new Zelda title was really not, I didn't really like the change in the format of the game.
Yeah.
You know, the first game that has come out for the system that made me want to get one is the Mario vs. Rabbids game.
Yeah. Yeah. They look cool.
The mashup looks cool. And then, of course, like Odyssey looks completely bonkers. But
yes, Odyssey look. And that's the game that I think I'm sort of like. Because then I can, then I have a little bit of back catalog. Like I would go back and play Mario Kart, and you know, like there's older titles that, because I don't have a Wii, I haven't had a Nintendo actually. Now that I think about it, I've had 3DS and like I've had their portables, but I've never had a console in my house. That's very weird. I've never thought about that before. I'd never had the classic, the Super Nintendo, the 64.
Yeah, you were always the Sega guy.
Yeah. Wow. But I think Odyssey looks absolutely mind-blowingly incredible. Yeah. And
I'm just in that awkward position of being a Wii U owner and then just feeling like I was totally burned by...
And you were, to an extent.
No,
like,
absolutely.
You're not wrong. You
know? And I mean, the thing about, you know, if you want to get technical about the game Breath of the Wild in general, you know, it is very, very clear that that game was originally designed to make use of a second screen.
Yeah.
And then when the Switch came along, you know, it functionally would have been an inferior game to be played on one screen alone. So they just made both games somewhat inferior by taking away the second screen from the Wii U and just kind of disabling that altogether, which is unfortunate. So,
I mean, the Wii U, we said all along, it's a weird proposition to make to the purchaser. It's like this thing that's hard to explain, and we don't really know if we're gonna have a lot of purpose behind it, but we're sure hoping. You know, I mean, it's similar in voice and effect to what Nintendo or Microsoft tried to do with Kinect, which is like, we think this is a neat thing and hopefully people will like it and you might like it, but we don't know. And like, you know, it just wasn't as friendly as like putting an Alexa in your home. It felt more invasive somehow, I think, with the cameras, and it just was a weird sell at the end of the day. And the mm-hmm. Wii U, I think, suffered from not a clear marketing path, I guess, as well. And then just no developer support, and then sort of an inferior machine at the time where people were putting out Hulk machines. So
sure. I mean, I do feel like when the SKUs are refreshed for the Switch, either like yeah. in like a bundle or like a hardware refresh, I'd probably
right.
get in on this, but I'm not in any rush like I used
to. I think that's, yeah, like I'm not in any kind of rush for it. I'll wait till Odyssey comes out. If I happen to have extra money hanging around, which is unlikely, then maybe I'll pick one up. If not, then, you know, I don't game enough to like justify two consoles in the house anyways. So mm-hmm. it's like,
exactly.
I'll just kind of wait until either a great deal or like that moment where everybody's like, you gotta, like, we're all yeah. playing X, you know, and I'll be like, yeah. all right, fine.
Everybody's playing PUBG on the Switch. You have to get it.
Okay.
oh boy.
To some sad news. Battleborn, the short-lived Overwatch competitor from, oh God, I just blanked their studio name.
Gearbox.
Is going bye-bye. It's getting no more updates. It's getting sunset. And it's just shortly after it went free-to-play, too. They just announced free-to-play, I think, like a couple of months ago, tops. Mm-hmm. And now it will be gone. I never ended up playing Battleborn. I actually almost got it. Then Ash was the one who pushed us into Overwatch. And I was like, all right. And then I just waited and got yeah. Overwatch on the PC. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, rough times. It's a competitive market right now.
It is. And I there's still a part of me that just thinks that if that game were Borderlands 3, people would have been totally yeah. happy with it. And there would have been yeah. room for both. You know, I unfortunately feel like we're kind of in this weird place with games where, like, what we saw with Breath of the Wild, where, you know, long running series are starting to sort of bend to, you know, what's popular, yeah. I guess, in gaming. So, you know, you're starting to see a number of games go the route of like Dark Souls, and then,
right.
We see Battleborn, you know, starting to dip into this, you know, whatever you call it, like a battle arena, or
yeah,
you know, something that's like doesn't have like a strong narrative behind it. It's meant to be consumed more in like a bite-sized way, the same
just
way.
Sort of what's mind-blowing about Overwatch, right? Like it is that, but they also somehow like blizzard it up with these like crazy narratives around the characters and like amazing voice and artwork. Like they still do all of that extra stuff, even mm-hmm. though they know all you're showing up for is essentially, you know, an arena battle that's
yeah.
gonna like last 3.5 minutes, and then you're like, it's like, it's very weird.
I mean,
I don't know,
it's so highly polished. I think it's just hard to compete yeah. with that. And another game that is kind of going to sunset is Mass Effect Andromeda, which is, you know, again, really too bad. I really do feel like that game did not get a fair shake, and I mean, I think some of the criticisms of the game were valid, but like. Yeah. To discount a whole game based on facial animations is not.
Oh, I mean,
a valid argument.
I know you've made this before, but let's be fair. Like, if you're going to be fair to one side, we got to be fair to both sides. To me,
yes.
And it's like, we played multiplayer, mm-hmm. I had fun. I had a lot of fun playing with you guys. I was like, oh, it was fun, and it kind of made me miss Mass Effect. And I was like, I'm gonna fire it back up and get back into the story. And I just was like, what is going on? Like, it's. I love all the people at that studio. They make amazing games. This one, I feel like just, I don't know, it just didn't get the attention it deserved or the backing it needed or whatever it might be. But
right. And that's the part that's fair. Like, but yeah. you can't write that into a 140 character hot take.
No.
So instead,
I mean, I'm not hot taking it. It's just, I played and I was like, God, I just am not engaged.
Right.
Like, I am not engaged in this game in any shape or form.
Of course.
It's a bummer.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the valid part. But instead, people just post screenshots and it's like, look at these faces.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, you know, they can patch that, right? And so they did.
Yeah.
You can't necessarily patch the, you know, the engagement in the first 5 hours of the game or the first 1 hour of the game. Like,
right.
That's
yeah.
a different problem altogether. But that game, the stream that they did, they've been doing multiplayer streams each week. The stream that they did most recently, they announced was going to be their last kind of like weekly stream.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to continue rolling out, you know, weekend challenges, but the next like official stream would only come, I guess, when the next character kit was going to be released. So multiplayer has still content planned in the form of character kits and additional weapons, and then maybe some special stuff for N7 Day during that week as well. But pretty much that's it. There's not going to be any more patches other than quality of life updates for multiplayer. And, you know, obviously BioWare is going to move on to other things like Anthem. So,
yeah, I mean, and that's seemingly going to be a very big lift for them. So I don't know.
Yeah.
If they announced anything other than Anthem at this point or no,
I'm probably not the right person to ask.
Yeah, I'm not either. We got the two wrong people to ask.
I know. I want to say I did see a thread with Mike Laidlaw saying that something Dragon Age related,
right?
was happening. I asked him if it was Dragon Age kart racing. I didn't hear back.
there's also a part of me though that while that's fan, I'm sure great news for big Dragon Age, those dragon heads out there. At the same time, there's the part of me that's like, I'm sort of excited. I'm not crazy excited about Anthem because it depends on what the game ends up being at the end of the day. But
it could be like Destiny, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of like where I'm like, it just is not, I'm not like a, that's not how I game. So, but like, I'm sort of excited about it, but I'm more excited that it's just they're doing something new. Like, I kind of like, I don't want Halo 17. I want like new games about different things to come out. And so like, when I hear that they're going to do another Dragon Age, it's like, cool. But I'd rather, like, I don't know, like a new take on fantasy gaming or something from them. I'd like something like they, I feel like they played a story out and I feel like we could go somewhere else from here with them. But, you know, I don't know. If they're going to sell buku copies of it if they put it out. So I don't see why they would.
Sure.
But
I just kind of see, the trajectory with Destiny, and it just makes me worried as an older gamer, you know, to say like, well, am I going to be able to log in every single week and do whatever
I'm
gonna need to do to get my emblems or whatever I'm supposed to collect for this game to keep up with the community. I don't know.
Like, you know, Destiny looks gorgeous and we have a bunch of friends playing and I'm like, I can't keep up with it. I'm not like, I also don't game with a headset on 99% of the time. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's hard for me to get into those like kind of coordinated games where you need to be talking to each other. It's just not a thing I do anymore.
Right.
But then again, you know, maybe Mario Odyssey will come out and I'll just bury myself in that. And I just thought that'll be the way I go. I'll be the old guy playing Mario games.
I know,
and no longer.
That's the thing that makes me sad, is that like these, like, you know, isolated experiences are they're not few and far between, but that's certainly not what's the hot thing on the streams these days, you know? So
what are you going to do? I will say, and we can move to this next piece of news because I'll actually include a piece about the game coming out. I think you might have seen this, and I think it's absolutely incredible.
Yes.
But so South Park, we're going to talk about the new episode in a second, and we won't spoil anything. But they just announced that the difficulty mode of the new game, Fractured But Whole, is affected by the harder you make the game, the darker your skin color will be in the game.
Is it the other way around, or like skin color?
Well, whatever. I mean... The hard mode is when you are essentially a black person or brown person.
Right.
And there's even a comment from Cartman where he's like, oh, I can't, God damn it, I'm going to butcher the comment. But basically he said like, no, you just won't have access to all the things that everybody else gets. And I'm like, oh my God, this, like, they are so laser targeted at like satire, and they can do a thing that like, they do it in a way that it's like so perfectly, it's just like satire incarnate, you know, like it's like hard to comment on because it's like such a boiled down concept into this one little thing where they're like, no, life is harder when you have darker skin, you know, like it's like, this is how the world works. And you're like, ah, shit. Like,
yes.
Oh, that feels weird, you know? And you're like, but it's true. Like they're nailing a subject at a moment that I think it's a hot button topic too. So
there's also like this is the first, you know, the first game was sort of like a standalone title, and the new one's going to have a season pass attached to it. And there's just a part of me that wouldn't be surprised if there was a line of dialogue in the game to kind of make fun of you for pre-ordering the game and buying the season pass without knowing what's going to be in it.
Yeah.
It's just,
they are perfect at like trolling their own fans. And speaking, that was holy cow, Scott, that was a segue.
See, we're still here. We can do this.
We're so good at this.
Yeah.
South Park, had their season premiere. It was great. Everybody should watch it. It's on Hulu right now, as well as probably, I think, southpark.com. Do they put new episodes up right away on their?
I think they do. I mean, it's already on Hulu, so they must be.
But the new episode is not as political. They're clearly leaving the kind of the straight up political arena that they were in last year. And it kicks off with an episode about Alexa and OK Google being the mine both just woke up and said sorry to me. They did something kind of amazing that I thought somebody would do at some point, and they did it, where basically they kept using those keywords over and over and over again. And then there's a moment in the show where Eric's in a room, Cartman's in a room surrounded by all of the home assistants, and he starts saying all of their names, including Siri and Echo. He uses every single name. He uses the wake up key for every single one of them and gets them all to talk to each other. But in talking to each other, they continue saying each other's names to each other. So it's like apparently just wreaked havoc. My Google woke up like 100 times because that's what's in the living room where I was watching it. Kept waking up, but like I kept saying cancel. And I think once the episode, I watched it like 2 days later. I think once Google pushes updates pretty quickly when they know people are trying to troll it. And I think they pushed an update to kill it so that when it happened in South Park, it wouldn't do anything. But
amazing.
But yeah, it was absolutely amazing. It was really funny. But if you have an Alexa, I highly recommend you hit the mute button before you watch this episode because it was incredible to watch. But yeah, very funny, really good take on this stuff. So glad it's back. I love fall TV. Maybe we'll talk about fall TV next week. But
yes, we should. We'll watch this back for sure.
But man, yeah, I'm so stoked that it's back. Broad City also came back and it was a fantastic episode.
I heard that as well. Excellent.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Carolina Ravassa, and you're listening to the Rated NA Podcast.
So the first thing I want to talk about is Agents of Mayhem, which is the, I think I talked about this before you guys went on your con travel, but
yeah,
it's the new game from Deep Silver, Volition, from, I think the makers of, you know, the Saints Row series. It has a very, like, kind of Saints Row spinoff vibe to it, and I think now that I've played more of the game, I'm still sort of impressed by the overall quality of the game. I think that if you, it's an open world game, but you can play as a team of three superheroes. You pick from a team of 12. You can bring three into the field at a time. You switch between them on the fly. You don't control all three at the same time. You kind of like magically morph into the three that you pick.
Right.
And it kind of has, it's like, it's almost, it plays out like Saturday morning cartoons, watching G.I. Joe. You know, it's got lore in the same way that Overwatch characters have lore and a lot of detail to them. They all play very differently. And then it's got, of course, the open world feel, ridiculousness of a Saints Row game. And the thing that continues to amaze me is how much vocal work was done for the game. I mean, there's 12 characters that you can pick from, and actually 13 if you pre-ordered the game. And then there are characters back at your home base, which is kind of like a shield facility almost, if you will. All those characters are voiced and you can go talk to them. And then there's just tons of chatter in the game. You know, there's individual missions. You can be in an open world doing nothing. And characters back at your base will start to talk to the characters that you're controlling in the game. So someone in your squad. And I just think it's really great. And like I said before, it probably won't be, you know, the game of the year of this year, but I think that this game could easily be overlooked, you know, because it's kind of coming out at the beginning of the holiday season, like way early in the holiday season, end of summer kind of time frame. And I would just encourage people to try it if you have the time to try it, because I do think it's really good. You know, my only criticism that I would have of the game at this point is that I feel like, as far as open world games go, the world, you know, the ambient characters in the world don't have a lot of like life to them, but I think that was probably a concession made because all the characters you are a part of are constantly talking to each other, which I think is really cool and something that's important to us. You know, we're really into voice acting on this podcast, so it's nice to see that that's done in a game like this. And then sometimes the missions can become repetitive too, but those are two minor grievances in a world that I think is like otherwise very good. And, you know, we talked about Battleborn earlier. If you kind of like are feeling the burn from not having like a Borderlands type game, you know, if you wish that Overwatch was a open world first person adventure, you know, this might be the game for you. So I'd encourage people just to take another look at that. So I just wanted to follow up on my earlier comments now that I'm, I think, a little more than like halfway through the game and moving towards the end, but it's still very, very good. A lot of deep customization too for each of the characters, depending on how you want to kind of like tweak each character's abilities to suit like your team and play style, which is really cool. And everything, the thing that I appreciate is that everything is redoable for free. You can even do it like in the open world. You don't have to go somewhere. You can just go into your squad menu and go, oh, I want to reallocate all of my points for this one character because I want to make them work better with my other teammates, or I'm going into a dungeon, I want to try something. Right. And you can do it, which I think is really cool. So that's Agents of Mayhem. I hope that more people play it because I'd like to see more of it in the future. And it's just, it's available everywhere. I think on all platforms, if I'm not mistaken. So that's that. Do you want to talk about Iron Marines before we get to Observer?
Sure.
Yeah.
If you'd like.
Do
so,
it.
So Iron Marines came out this week. I think it came out on Friday for the iPad and iPhone and I believe Android as well. Mm. And it is the newest game from Ironhide Studios, who made all of the Kingdom Rush games, which is basically one of my favorite series on iPad ever.
They're killer, man. Killer games.
They're so good. They're so polished and so they're voice acted and like well put together. The music's great. And those were all basically tower defense games, right? So you set up your towers, kind of fought off the thing. You had a hero that you could move around the battlefield as you wanted. They're taking a little bit of a turn here. This is sort of Star Trek. Jesus.
StarCraft.
This is sort of StarCraft meets tower defense.
Really? So I did not know that.
So all of the missions that you're doing, you are not actually building towers. You have bases that you can build and build tower defenses around it. But you are moving a crew of guys around a map trying to get to different parts and basically dealing with an alien race that's built up in different areas. It is very, very StarCraft in nature, but done just with the level of like polish and precision that you expect from Ironhide at this point. So everything's voice acted. There's three heroes that you get right off the bat that you can play around with. One's sort of a melee phantom like creature. One is like a straight up marine with a machine gun, and the other is like an aerial defense missile launcher, like in a mech kind of girl. So and they all have leveling systems, of course, as well, much like they did in the Kingdom Rush games. But they're way more in depth now. There's whole skill trees based on them. And then there's skill trees based on your guys that you can build. And then as you unlock different bases and you go through the maps, you get more and more types of guys that you can unlock. So you start out, you just kind of like your basic Marines. And then you get snipers. And you get these like sword wielding guys. And you get mechs of different kinds, either air defense or non. It really is a crazy deep game. It blows my mind when I get into this stuff, like how much game is sitting on this iPad for $4.99.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the twist on this new mechanic they've got works pretty well. I have like minor complaints. I may have missed a tip or something on how to do this. You can't really group combatants, so you can't like get all of your Marines and move them at once. You have to kind of like drag it by team, and each one will be grouped by like three guys, so you have three Marines per group, and then you
create like little squads that you can manage.
Yeah, they're like little mini squads, but you can't like group them into like, oh, I want all of these guys. You can double tap and like do some things to make them focus on an area, but it's not necessarily like, it's not the same level of control that you might have in a StarCraft. It's a little more unwieldy, so you find yourself kind of like dragging your front line and then like quickly dragging the guys you want behind them and then dragging your snipers behind them, like in kind of quick succession. Otherwise death happens quite often. But they're pretty forgiving in the death. Most of your guys regen. If you like pull back enough, you can kind of, all your guys will kind of restore themselves. So there's that. But the actual mechanic of the StarCraft in nature movement and stuff works pretty well. And then just, I don't know, I'm just always blown away by the level of polish on these games. It's really just kind of insane.
Their games are always visually beautiful as well.
I mean, it's visually stunning. There's voice acting throughout. The music's fantastic. Like the mechanics work really well. It's fun. Like, and it looks fun. It's still kind of got their art style behind it. So it's not straight, you know, they didn't like rip StarCraft straight up. It's very like cartoony in nature still, much like Kingdom Rush was. There's still little hidden features all over the maps. There's side goals and quests that you can do. For you, Scott, there are like, I want to say 500 achievements, it feels like, in the game.
Yeah.
It's just a wall of achievements that you get bonuses for as you unlock them. But yeah, I'm probably maybe a quarter of the way into this game, and I've been playing for about 3 days now.
My understanding is Ash Without Power has completed the game.
That's what we hear. 100% of it, right? Is that what he said?
Yeah, I think he told us that he tethered his phone to his iPad and used the internet just so he could purchase some of the
new guys,
the premium characters, for the game.
Yeah, so much like Kingdom Rush, there's premium characters as well. There are, I think, like anywhere from $2.99 to $6.99, I think, for premium characters. Mm-hmm. But the game itself is $4.99, and there's absolutely no need to buy premium characters. You can also buy like updates to like gold and resources that you use to move your skill tree.
But that being said, the premium characters, in my opinion, are worth the cost, because I got a couple for the other games, and I really enjoyed trying something new.
Yeah, but if you're like, I don't want to spend more than $5 on a game, you can play this entire game without ever buying any of the premium stuff if you wanted to. You could buy the game for $5. It's completely standalone. But yes, the extra characters just tend to be really fun, and usually are kind of like jokes or like nods to something else in the same kind of genre, So like it'll be like a character sort of from StarCraft, but like
sure,
just nearby, or it'll be like, somebody from Alien or something, like kind of a nod to that kind of character, which there already is one in the game. But it plays super smooth. I don't know, I feel like I'm rambling a little bit. It plays super smooth, is absolutely refreshing, and not straight tower defense. So if you loved all the Kingdom Rushes, but you were like not super enthused about playing a new one that's just set in a different setting, this is actually a brand new take on a game for Ironhide. It's much different and feels really fun and great. They don't kind of get lost in some of the, I think, problems. So there's been some of these strategy games put out on iPad already. They tend to be pay to play games, but
I don't think they get a single player game though, right?
Yeah, this is single player, no internet required. And I don't think they get stuck on kind of the notion of, because they're not trying to get you to buy crystals, I guess is the way to put it.
Yep.
They don't get stuck in this grindy notion. Like it's such an easy game to just move through the levels. And then as you're moving through the levels, they'll open up bonus quests. And if you do the bonus quests, those tend to be more straight up tower defense games where you're like, you need to protect this thing for X amount of time before the level's over, and you get a bunch of bonus experience and stuff for that. And then you can replay levels with different heroes for you. So like if you started out and you just use the Marine all the way through, and then you're like, oh, I wanted to use the Phantom guy, you can go back and use him and level him up on earlier levels where you won't just get murdered right away because he's not leveled all the way. So it's totally replayable, absolutely beautiful. Like, not that this is shocking at all, it's just Ironhide absolutely did it again, and I love the setting, and I love the kind of take on a strategy RPG mixed with a tower defense game.
That's so cool. I think a lot of people would agree with you. It's got 5-star reviews, tons of them on the Apple Store right now. So
it was like they topped the charts, I think, this weekend for game sales. So go check it out. Iron Marines from Ironhide Studios. I'm sure we're going to talk more next week about it with Ash, because he, as we said, already beat it. So we can maybe all try to beat it in the next week. And then we can talk maybe more in depth about it. But Iron Marines from Ironhide Studios on iPad and on Android and on iPhone.
Awesome. The last thing that we want to talk about on the podcast this week is a new game called Observer. I think the game actually came out about a month ago, but hey, hurricanes, right? So Observer is the new title from Blooper Team, which is a funny name for a studio that makes like horror games.
Blooper. Right?
Yeah, from Blooper.
Yeah.
And it is the previous game the studio made was Layers of Fear, which was probably my favorite indie game of last year. Mm-hmm. And this game, I think, kind of follows suit in what they were doing with Layers of Fear, kind of takes it to a slightly different level than the previous game. But what you do in Observer is it's a sort of a first person, I don't want to say it's a walking simulator, because you do a little bit more in this game than you do in Layers of Fear in terms of, like manipulating gameplay. It's a cyberpunk thriller set in the year 2084. You play as a detective, Dan Lazarski, who is called an observer. And what observers do, and this is like, we're going to get...
This is like super Blade Runner.
Yeah, we're going to get way deep into a bunch of like dark sci-fi, right?
Yeah.
Observers can kind of delve into the minds, the thoughts, the dreams, the fears of people that have these neurological implants inside of them, and basically explore these memories as if they are actually there, right?
Huh.
The main character, Dan Lazarski, sort of quickly gets into a personal case that he starts to investigate. And as you might expect, he kind of starts to lose his grip on reality, like over the course of the game. So in Layers of Fear, you did a lot of like walking around, and it was kind of more like going through a haunted house, right?
Right.
You know, you would walk into a hallway, you'd go into a room through the door, you would turn around all of a sudden and the door wasn't there anymore. And then you turn around again, there'd be something different in front of you. And the main character in that game would just sort of become insane, become unraveled throughout the course of the game. In this game, you play more as a detective. And the thing that is, I guess, scary about this game is kind of like, obviously the visuals are still very intense. Like, these games look like paintings visually in the environments I would describe as hyper-realistic, meaning that like you never walk into an empty room and just see like a box in the corner. Like, it looks like every room is an actual apartment, right? There's like, you can find the bathroom, you can find the bed, you can go through their stuff and like look what's in their refrigerator, stuff like that, right? So kind of like the hyper realism of the game kind of immerses you in it, and it kind of puts you on edge while you're playing the game throughout, because you never know if it's going to be like, is it going to be a jump scare? Are you going to see something that's like super creepy from like a techno perspective? Is it going to be like some crazy human with like all these augmented pieces coming out of them, like tubes and wires and stuff?
Right.
You know, fear is something that is very subjective, right? So I can't tell you if you would find this game to be scary or not, you know, because it really just depends on, you might just get scared playing in this environment because it's like very spooky looking and sad and dark.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's, you know, some more traditional scary stuff where it's like you walk in a room and there's a television monitor and then like a giant eyeball appears on it and you're like, ugh, you know, like, there's stuff like that too. But, I'm not too deep into the game, but I can tell you that going into the minds of other people is like more like Layers of Fear than what the main game is. Like, in the main game, you're kind of just like a detective in this like really gross environment trying to figure out like what happened to, I don't want to like say what's happening in the game, but you're trying to unravel this case that you're investigating. But it is just, again, it's just like a bonkers, crazy, scary game. You know, there is more to do. Like, you do get to make some difficult decisions about how to handle different events in the game. And it's not like it doesn't drastically change the course of the game, but it's just like more like a thought experiment. It's like, you know, if faced with this situation, what would you do? And it's like, well, both options seem pretty terrible to me, you know?
Right.
It's just one of those kinds of games. And, you know, definitely like Blade Runner inspired, of course. Like, I keep thinking of like Strange Days when you can like,
okay,
kind of like relive the memories of other people.
Yeah.
But it is just like pure nightmare fuel. And so, I don't know why I keep doing this to myself, because like Layers of Fear was so hard for me to play, but I really loved it in the end. But, you know, if you're into like horror or cyber thriller, if you enjoy sort of like maybe something that's on the fringe of like a walking simulator, but has like a little bit more to do, if you're into sci-fi dystopian settings, like, this is the game for you. It's available on Xbox, PS4, and Steam. The only thing that I would maybe cite as a criticism of the version I played, which was on Xbox One, is that it has some difficulty with loading at different points in the game, because the game is, you know, seamless when you're moving around. But the loading does not come at critical points in the game. So you might be walking through the apartment complex and you're going from one wing to another wing, and you might just stand at a door trying to open it for like 10 seconds while the, you know, obviously the game is loading in the background, but It's just kind of weird sometimes to just stand at a door and be like, I'm trying to open this. Because the first time I thought I just couldn't go through the door. But what it was really doing was loading, because there's a very minimal UI in the game, so you don't realize right off the bat that that's what's happening. But once you kind of get the hang of like what the gameplay is, it's like, well, I'm just moving from one area to another. I'm not like in a scary area waiting for something to load, which is like, right. That would be worse. And that's really the only criticism of the game, just because it's so visually intense. I would almost recommend maybe considering playing it on PC, where I would assume the load times to be shorter. So that's Observer. It's from Blooper. Obviously, if you haven't played Layers of Fear,
cool.
If you have not played Layers of Fear, you should play that as well.
Yeah.
But if sci-fi is your thing, Observer would be the game to play if you like to kind of like explore some of these dark futures that we may encounter with, you know, with cyber augmentations and things of that nature, being plugged into machines and stuff like that. This is the game for you.
But just the look of the game is awesome. I was just looking at some screenshots and stuff. It looks incredible.
That's what I was trying to say, is that like they did this in Layers of Fear as well, where it's like the environments look photorealistic, which is like, I cannot imagine what their art team is doing when they're creating these games, because like every corner of the game has something meaningful in it. Like you don't see things like repeating textures, or you don't walk into a room where it's like, oh, well, that was the same asset in this room that was in the other room, and they just put it in a different orientation. You know, it's like everybody's bedroom looks different. Like everybody's kitchen looks different. Like everybody's computer isn't set up in a different way. You know, it's like, it's stuff like that. And it's just super weird. And of course, because it's a horror game, you start to see some like very jarring things especially when you go into the dream sequences. And so that's all really on point. So that would be Observer. I think that brings us to the end of this podcast.
We did it, Scott.
Yeah. See, we don't need that other guy.
We had a thoughtful talk about many topics.
Yeah.
Without that other guy.
Yeah. I told him that we were just going to talk for football. We're going to talk about football for 30 minutes.
Do you want to throw in our football talk at
fantasy
the very
football
end?
Talk? No. That's okay. I think we should just quit while we're ahead.
Melissa's beating my dad 141-63 right now.
Oh, that's awesome. Maybe she's the dark horse candidate this year. My goal is to do the least amount of work possible. So like I want to be a winning team with the lowest amount of points, you know?
Okay.
I think that's a metaphor for my life, where it's like, I just do just enough,
Scott, you doing okay, buddy? Do you need to talk about anything?
No, I'm fine. just do just enough, and then you can get, cause you just got to get to those playoffs, man. That's all that matters.
It's true. Yeah. It doesn't matter after that.
It does not matter. So, that was episode 285 of the Rated NA podcast. You can follow us in a lot of places, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're Nerd Appropriate. Let's see. We have, you know, once we do become more active on streams, we do have, channels on Twitch. We have a mixer team that we're trying to spin up at, I think it's like Rated NA is our mixer team name.
I believe so.
What am I leaving out? If you want to get in touch with us, we can reach out to nerds@nerdappropriate.com for general inquiries. And what's coming up next? What's our next thing that we're going to do? Are you going to the PAX board game?
I will be going to the PAX board game con with Melissa, actually, who is in as a Nerd Appropriate member.
Nice. When is that?
So November. So it's a little ways off.
Cool. So that's the next thing that we'll be at. And I think that's it. Hopefully we'll be at full strength next week, and Ash will have internet, and we can all, you know, do our thing.
We can.
Yeah.
We can all do our thing.
We can do our thing. We're still here.
Sounds like a plan.
We're still here. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we will see you next week.
Well, we'll talk to you next week.
We will talk to you next week.
Send us pictures of you, and then we'll see you whenever you send those
pictures.
We'll
see you. You won't see us. Not if I see you first.
Yes.
There you go.
All of that.
Okay, perfect.
All right.
Bye. I will try to explain.
I will listen to what you say and then tell you how dumb you are.
That sounds great. That's why I'm here.
I'll be like, ugh, Scott, no.